It is Sunday, July 19th. Most people spend their midday resting, but the systems running our lives, from tech stacks to global sports, don't take a day off. Netflix and Replit are currently running two different experiments on how to keep a company from falling apart when you plug AI into the engine. At Netflix, the Chief Product and Technology Officer, or CPTO, Elizabeth Stone is rejecting the idea that you can solve scaling problems by adding more rules. Instead, she is doubling down on high talent density and something called the Keeper Test. The goal is to avoid the standard corporate trap of adding process gates whenever something breaks. Netflix is positioning itself as a platform for creators, offering AI tools for things like post-production and localization, while keeping the human in the driver's seat for the actual storytelling. It is a bet that if you hire the right people and give them autonomy, you don't need a mountain of bureaucracy to keep the quality high. Replit is taking a different path by moving toward a self-driving company model. They have integrated AI agents across their internal systems like Slack, GitHub, and Zendesk to handle operational workflows. This is not just a chatbot in a browser tab. These agents execute tasks, validate their own work, and iterate based on real-time feedback. The result is a massive jump in engineering output, which nearly tripled while keeping the quality steady. Here is the thing about these two models. Netflix is focused on the culture of the human, while Replit is focused on the infrastructure of the agent. Netflix is worried that if you stop relying on human judgment, you end up with a pile of low-quality, AI-generated noise. They view AI as a tool to enable the creator, not as a replacement for the craft that decides if something is worth building in the first place. It is a philosophy that treats systems thinking as a core skill for every employee, regardless of their role. If an engineer understands the business architecture, they can build paths that let everyone else move faster without shipping a product that feels like it was cobbled together by a dozen different departments. Replit, meanwhile, is finding that the human role is shifting from a doer to a director. They are showing that once you give agents access to your data, you stop being a company that just buys software, and you start being a company that builds its own internal tools. That is a hell of a shift. It reduces vendor costs and creates a system that is perfectly tailored to your own workflows. But there is a catch. Replit found that automation does not actually eliminate bottlenecks. It just changes the nature of them. When you start cranking out code at triple the speed, you suddenly need much better review mechanisms. Replit ended up deploying agents to act as core reviewers, which saved about 30% of human review time. That is a significant win, but it highlights the reality that you are just trading one set of problems for another. The most interesting part is how they got people to actually use these things. Replit avoided the top-down mandate approach, which usually dies a slow death in office politics. They used a pull model. They showed off what the agents could do in public Slack channels, and eventually, the non-engineering team started asking for the tools themselves. It seems the companies that win in this environment are the ones that treat AI as a reasoning partner rather than just a fancy summarization tool. Whether you are leaning into the Netflix model of high-agency humans or the Replit model of integrated agentic loops, the lesson is the same. The bottleneck is no longer the technology. It is the coordination cost of the people who have to manage it. If you treat AI as a peripheral toy, you are going to get buried by the people using it as a structural foundation. That tension between rigid rules and human instinct isn't just a software problem, though. It shows up on the pitch, too. If we were to look at the current landscape of international soccer, the top tier features Spain and Argentina, two teams built on fundamentally different operational philosophies. Spain uses a methodical system centered on ball possession, while Argentina relies on a star-centric model focused on Lionel Messi, pronounced Lionel Messi. Spain functions as a product of a long-term development pipeline. They aim to minimize individual reliance by embedding a specific philosophy of rhythmic passing into players from a young age. Their primary risk is predictability, though the addition of Lam and YAML, pronounced Lime E-N YAMAHL, offers an unpredictable variable that could help them convert possession into actual goals. Argentina, by contrast, functions as a high-friction organization. They funnel resources to Messi, accepting the risk of a single point of failure in exchange for his brilliance. Argentina's history of overcoming near elimination suggests their model is actually built for survival under pressure. This is a classic clash of systems. Spain tries to control the environment to neutralize individual talent, while Argentina hopes to force a chaotic game where their star can find a decisive moment. The tournament has also been marked by controversy regarding the video assistant referee, or VAR. There is a lot of noise regarding the recent overturning of a disciplinary suspension for a specific player, which some commentators are claiming involved political intervention. It is a reminder that when rules appear fluid, the legitimacy of the entire competition suffers, no matter how good the players are. The struggle to maintain legitimacy when systems are under pressure isn't limited to sports. A recent essay making the rounds in business circles argues for what it calls a violent reflex for action. The core idea is that many entrepreneurs fall into intellectual procrastination, where they collect information from courses and seminars without ever changing their actual business processes. Proponents of this high-velocity model argue that knowledge without application generates zero revenue. They suggest that companies should mandate the deployment of new strategies within hours of learning them. The goal is to institutionalize speed, creating a competitive moat based on agility rather than just intelligence. It is a high-risk, high-speed approach. When an organization identifies a market shift and launches a solution while rivals are still in the planning phase, they gain a structural advantage. It is a force multiplier. The argument goes that linking these daily operational outputs to the security of one's family provides the resilience needed to survive business volatility, which honestly is a hell of a thing to say with a straight face. Look, there is a clear tension here. Spain and these high-velocity business models are betting on the idea that if you perfect the process, you win. They want to remove the variables. They want to turn the world into a machine that you can run with maximum efficiency. But then you look at Argentina or the reality of a volatile market, and you realize that systems are fragile. If you spend all your time building a perfect, predictable process, you might just find yourself standing on the pitch with all the possession in the world and no way to put the ball in the net. Sometimes, you need the chaos. Sometimes, you need the person who can ignore the manual and just win the game. The question isn't whether you have a plan. It is whether your plan is so rigid that it breaks the moment things get messy. And in both sports and business, the messy part is usually where the actual work happens. Speaking of things we decide to bet on, let's look at what else is shaping the culture right now. A few other things worth knowing today. First, look at how we name our kids. There is an argument going around that screenwriters are basically the unintentional architects of the playground. Writers give their characters specific names. Those names hit the screen, and eventually, they show up on birth certificates across the country. It is a feedback loop that suggests we are all way more susceptible to Hollywood's whims than we like to admit. Then there is the state of the creator economy. It is essentially a treadmill that never slows down because algorithms change on a weekly basis. Creators now have to prioritize aggressive, high-speed hooks just to keep people from scrolling past them. It is a hell of a way to make a living when your entire business model is at the mercy of a black box that hates you. Finally, political parties are learning the hard way that you cannot manufacture authenticity. When party elites try to recruit local candidates by checking demographic boxes or using top-down selection, voters usually smell the rot from a mile away. People generally prefer a candidate who actually knows the neighborhood, rather than one who was just deployed there by a spreadsheet in Washington. That is the state of things for now. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we will talk again tomorrow.